speak so highly of all of you and Benita. And I know that his time here is, while it's been a while, I know that all of you love them and the work that you're doing here. And I just always hear good things. As Rick mentioned, during the week, we're going to be talking about faith. And when I shared with Rick some of the possibilities of maybe some theories, some themes, I told him, I said, well, let's do this one. And I said, because I probably got the best compliment. And it was a sister in Ohio. I had presented these lessons, and she came up to me at the end of the week, and she said, I thought I was going to be bored out of my gourd. And I took that as a great compliment. I don't know what she looked at, and she thought, I don't know how much you can talk about faith, but that's what we're going to do. But we're going to do it by talking about the faces of faith. The word faces is obviously you think of different people, faces. And of course, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about some around 24 different Bible characters, real people of faith. Did they make mistakes? Of course they did. Do you and I make mistakes? Yes, we do. Do we sin? Of course. But we pick ourselves up and we press forward. And so we're going to learn a lot of wonderful things from these Bible characters as we spend time together. And so as we look at them, and I was trying to think, you know, when you try to think of a lesson and how you can title maybe a theme, the first time that I actually put a title, it was surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. Well, that the screen's gone by then, by the time you put that one down. And so I was thinking about how is it that you can come up with a way of talking about the not only the different Bible characters, but also be able to talk about the attributes of faith. And guess what word, when it's defined, and it's the word face, actually has that meaning. It can actually mean a facet or an attribute or an aspect. And so that's what we want to do. By looking at the Bible characters, we want to look at their faith and see what we can learn. And by looking at all of these different people of the Bible, you will find that the things that made them strong in their faith were just different aspects. And it's just wonderful to see, and it helps our faith. And so let's begin in Hebrews chapter 11 this morning. Hebrews chapter 11. And as you know, in the chapter, it highlights the importance of faith. And it does so by highlighting a lot of different Bible characters to talk about how important faith was. And so this is, I'm going to kind of treat this like a Bible class. So if I ask a question, feel free to shout out an answer, or I don't even mind stopping and you sharing with me some of your thoughts on some of these aspects. But the first question I have for you is, without faith, it is impossible to do what? In Hebrews chapter 11. It's impossible to please God. If you are bankrupt of faith, you will not please God. And that's found in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 6. So when you look down at verse 6, it says, but without faith it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God, there are two things. We must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And so those are two important truths. I have to believe that God exists. If I don't believe that he exists, obviously I'm not going to please him. And you think about the world that we live in today and just how people are turning more and more away from any type of belief in Almighty God. Regardless if they know who he is or they serve him faithfully in spirit and in truth, there are a lot of individuals around us that don't believe in God, period. And by their life, they may even profess, but what does the second part say? We also have to understand, as he says, that he is a rewarder of those who lazily seek him. So this week, we're not going to have a lazy faith. We don't like the word diligence. That's effort. That's putting forth a great effort. And yet, the scripture says he rewards those that diligently seek him. And so it's very important as then chapter 11 rolls from one Bible character after another. He goes from Abel to Enoch and Noah to Abraham to Sarah to Isaac to Jacob to Joseph to Moses to the Israelites to Rahab. And then the end of the chapter, you've got all of these unnamed individuals that as you go through, you start going, well, he's talking about Daniel there. These great Bible people of faith that had great faith. And so in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1 and 2, as the chapter concludes and we have a chapter break, read with me verse 1 and 2. Therefore, in conclusion to all the things that I just pointed out about faith, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And so, Lord willing, over the next 6 days, we are going to examine these great cloud of witnesses. They don't have to be named here, but some of the Bible characters, or maybe Bible characters you haven't thought about it in a while, or maybe you hadn't really looked and thought about it from this particular point of their faith and the things that make their faith known. Well, in chapter 2 and verse 1, we need to take these witnesses that surround us, and we need to learn from them. And the Bible is clear that the Old Testament is there, 1 Corinthians 10, for our learning, for our example. We can go back and we can read these stories. I love how the New Testament will, like in Hebrews chapter 11, will put that story in a certain way. And you go back and you read the story, and that's never said about them. But the Hebrew writer brings out this point, and I love that. So as we look together at these Bible characters, let's see what we can learn. But to do that, you know, it's clear as we think about how we need these Bible characters and their great facets or attributes or aspects of faith. They're called witnesses because of the strength and the courage, the genuineness of their faith. We're talking about the real deal. The real kind of faith, and that's one of our lessons as well. Well, America, we're not going to say a lot about this, but if I were to say, well, how do you think it's going in our country? As a younger man, I used to think, what is it with all the older people and preachers? They're always saying about how things are getting worse, and then all of a sudden in a few years, I'm going, wow, things are getting worse. And you start saying, well, I sound like my parents or something like that. But my, how things have so quickly changed in the last few years. And the ungodliness that is all around us. And the challenges that we're confronted with our country. As more and more wickedness and ungodly is accepted. And what is evil is called good. And what is good is called evil. It's discouraging at times. It's frustrating politically, socially. Sometimes we think, well, in North Alabama, to be honest with you, I mean, we're in a quote-unquote Bible Belt, and you think, you know, this doesn't really affect us. In a lot of ways, it doesn't. People go about their days, but they're still the same. They're not members of the Lord's church. They're lost where they commit these atrocious sins that we have in our minds. Sin is sin. But in a lot of ways, we're not affected by some of these things. But I think in a big city like this and what I see, there's a lot of challenges in this area with the ungodliness and the things that are going on. And so there's a real possibility of having your faith shaken. And you're trying to reach out and you're trying to get others to have the type of faith that we're talking about. And so as these men and women are held before us and we look at them and we see their facets of faith, we see their faces of faith. And what this is these are some of the things that we'll be talking about as we look through these Bible characters. And one of the things that you'll notice, I think, early on, and one of the challenges, I told Rick, I said, I am not in any way, don't want to be redundant. I hope during the week you're not going, he said that or he re-said that. But what I do want you to do is as we go through these lessons, whether I say anything about, hey, that's what we were talking about 2 days ago, they would fit in this idea of a righteous faith, or they would fit in this idea of a genuine faith, or they had courage. I may never point that out because we're looking at something else. But as I'll even point out in what I'm talking about in just a few minutes when we look at Abel, we won't have to bring up Abel again, but you'll be able to go, wait a minute, that was what was said about Abel. And so you can say, well, that was obviously something that Abel possessed as well. And really what you're talking about is when we look at all of these aspects of faith, this is what we're looking for in all of our faith. If we were to say we have a roundabout faith, you know, we're a well-rounded individual, we don't want to have pieces and parts. We want this to be who we are. And you're going to find out, of course, that all of these things are the teachings that we find in the Scriptures. So let's start by defining faith. Let's look over at Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Rick, do you think you could expound on that and spend? I have found that that is a profound statement, personally. I look at that and I think, I got a good grasp on that. And then I think a little bit more about substance. And then I'm going, wow, there's this whole thought. And I would suggest that in reality, while we look at this and say, well, that's just a great definition of faith, I look at it and say, this is one of those that you'll chew on a lifetime. That one verse, as you think about all the things that are said, especially if you look at some of the other translations and it uses different words and it says, well, wait a minute, the assurance. And so you start focusing in on that and you start realizing, wow, there's just a lot there. But the first thing that I want to mention and I want to suggest to you is that faith is very personal. Now, we're not talking about the faith. That's the Scriptures. That is God's system, God's will, God's on all the matters. We're talking about your own faith. And I know that you have your own faith and I have my own faith is because if you look at a passage like 2 Peter chapter 1 and in verse 5 through 12, add to your faith virtue, to your virtue knowledge, to your knowledge temperance or self-control. You're not adding to God's, you're adding to your own personal faith. To your own faith you want to add excellence, arte. To your own faith you want to add knowledge and self-control and so forth. It is your faith. And so however strong it is or however weak it is, that's actually on you. And so as we go through the week and we want to increase our own faith, that's going to be on you. Because while we share the same faith and belief, how strong it is depends on each of us as an individual. So it is your belief in God. It is your conviction in God. It is upon what basis you stand. You stand upon your faith. It is your profound trust in God. And I would say that you cannot separate faith from a profound trust in God. Your faith needs to trust in God. That's how you actually move through all the challenges. Because you trust that God and His will and His word is absolutely right. And so you're going to practice it. You'll put it into practice each and every day. And I would also say when we look at this idea is the substance of things hoped for. This is where it gets into this idea of it gives you a reality. Trying to understand this word substance or assurance. It is this reality to the things that you hope for. Now, hope is something or things that you have not seen. Remember, we're told that if you see it, it's no longer hope. It's the gift that you got, that you wanted, your parents got it. You don't hope for it anymore. It's real. It's in front of you. But faith is the substance. It is the reality of the things that you hope for. It is the foundation of your hope. And I've always understood there's faith, hope, and love. And what you do is if you increase your love, so will go your faith and your hope. If you increase your faith, so will go your hope and your love. And any combination you want. As your hope grows stronger, so it is because of your faith, and so it is your love will grow. They work together. When your love fades, so will your hope of heaven, and so forth. It'll be your faith that is weakening. And so as we move forward, we think about how important it is to have that foundation of all of the things. We see physical things. This is one of the challenges of life. When I moved to North Alabama, I thought, what will be the first lesson that I will bring? And the lesson I settled on was the carnal mind versus the spiritual mind. You either look at everything through eyes of I can touch and see and feel, and that's where you place all your hopes and expectations, or you have a spiritual mind that looks past all of these things that you can see, and you think with your spiritual mind, and you see past this realm at the things that cannot be seen. And so it is the substance. And not only that, it is the evidence of things not seen. Now think about that with me for just a moment. The evidence of things not seen. Faith gives proof to that which cannot physically be seen. Faith does that. Your faith does that. Think about that with me for a minute. You don't drink. You don't cuss. You don't fool around. You don't steal. You don't lie. You don't gamble. You don't. What you do is you're good, and you love, and you forgive, and you help, and you serve. That's evidence, folks. In a world that is focused in on physical things, and yet your faith takes you in a direction that is towards God and upward to things that are not seen, that's proof. But why do you do that? Why is it you forsake these things and you put off these things and you put on these things? Why do you do that? Because of your faith, your conviction, your belief in God. That's why you do that. Because of your strong belief that there is a Creator, and one day you will stand before your Maker and give an account of the things that you have done. That's why you do that. You believe that with all of your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And because you do that, you love your neighbor as yourself. And so the lives of these great men and women are before us. So let's do this. Let's look at Abraham's faith. We're going to look at two this morning, and then we'll move on into some of these other characters throughout the week. What time do you normally quit? I forgot to ask. That doesn't mean anything to me. Quarter after, 20 after? Okay, thank you. I did the math. You put me on the spot. Math, chew gum, walk and talk and look down. I can't do that in the screen. And knowing that, so this is like, woo. Am I on camera? Am I on camera? Oh, no. See, now I'm going to get camera struck. All right, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8. Let's read what the Hebrew writer says here. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. Have you set off to go someplace else in your life not knowing where you're going? And I would suggest that probably there's going to be a handful that you said, yeah, we did that one time. It's just not normal that you would set out not knowing where you're going. But here we have Abraham, who God said, go. And Abraham went. He obeyed. And so that's the first thing that I want to look at. A known faith, it's known, is obedient. It obeys. By known, we mean it's faith without works is dead. Being alone. Faith working with your works. Faith works. It's known. Show me your faith without your works. I will show you my faith by my works. James chapter 2. And so it's known. And how is it known? Because we obey. How much easier would life be? Think about your life. Maybe some of the sin in your life that has occurred or the mistakes that you've made and the difficulties and challenges. Why did that happen? Because you did not obey God. How simple life would seem if when God says, do it, we do it. God says, go, Abraham. Abraham went. He took off not even knowing where he was going. But God said, go, and Abraham obeyed. To trust God, do you see the profound trust? I'm going to take you. I'm going to take you to a place. Go. Leave your family and go. And he did. And he set out because he was obedient. So to trust God and to practice his ways, would that solve a lot of religious error if we just did what God said and put it into practice? The Spirit and in truth? Yes, it would. Religious error would go away if we just do things God's way. But you see, we're the problem, right? We get in between God's will. I ended up doing what I want to do. Abraham obeyed. There's a children's song that I did not know about until I think Forrest is almost 30 now. When he was he's my nephew. When he was a little bit younger, he's a little older than my oldest, Nicholas. But he was singing a song one time when I was around him, and they were down in Florida. The ladies may know it, the men may know it, but it's, obedience is the only way to show that we believe. Do you know that one? Doing exactly as the Lord commands, and doing it faithfully. If you want to do right, get your attitude right in the narrow way, obedience is the only way to show that we believe. And then they spell it, and I'm not going to do that because I'll make a disaster, and you'll say, he didn't even spell that right. Obedience. Abraham obeyed. Look at chapter 11, verse 9 and 10. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs of him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Isn't that incredible? Abraham waited on God. What were the three promises? Land, a nation, and the seed promise, Christ. All the nations of the earth would be blessed. Those three promises. Did he see the land? He saw it. He didn't get that promise, did he? How about the nation? Didn't see the birth of the nation either, did he? That happened down in Egypt. How about the seed of Christ? Didn't see that either. And yet he obeyed. Why? Because of his faith. God promised these things, and though he never saw the nation, never saw his family receive the promised land, never saw the promise at its grandest fulfillment in Christ, how could he wait for the city of God that God himself has built? Faith. That's how he did it. Faith. And here's what I would like to say, too. As we go through this, these lessons are personal, your faith. But I want to say this, too. Don't ever in your mind say, well, that was Abraham. Abraham was a giant. No. Abraham was a man like you and I that had faith. And so we can have that same kind of faith. So within his mind, you understand, he could see a city which did not physically dwell or exist. But he saw it, and he longed for it, and he labored towards it. A known faith. And so what does 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7 say? We walk by faith and not by sight. Isn't that what Abraham was doing? I can't say, all right, we're going to take a time out. We're going to go take a field trip. We're going to go into heaven. We're going to look around, and we'll come back all going, oh, I don't want to miss that. Where does that have to take place? In the recesses of your mind. You have to know that when Jesus said, I go to prepare a place, in my Father's house are many mansions. that God is telling you there is plenty of room. Don't you worry about where you're going to dwell, because that's what we worry about. Where am I going to eat, sleep? What am I going to drink? And God says, I've got where you're going to dwell. I've got that taken care of. See it in your mind and work and labor for the Lord. Let your faith be known. In verses 13 to 16, notice what he says here. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them. There's a great three-point lesson right here. Assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. Here's another thing that we want to look at over in chapter 17 and verses, here in verses 17 to 19. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, "In Isaac your seed shall be called," concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. So here we have Abraham and his faith. It is not only obedient, but it is a faith that, let me back this up. I think I missed a slide. Well, I did not. So let me just say, the point that in these verses is that it declares plainly, there in verses 13 to 16, declares plainly. Again, known. People know your faith. It's declared plainly because they know. They know, where are you going? How are you getting there? What is your purpose? Why you are who you are? And then in these verses, how could Abraham raise his knife to kill the very son that God said, this son will be the one that fulfills the promises. I want you to offer him as a sacrifice. How could he raise his knife, get ready to plunge it into Isaac? And Isaac was the one that would fulfill those promises. Obedient faith. Do you see the trust? How is it that Abraham, in his mind, could do this? I'm going to be obedient. I'm going to offer my son, even though in all of the story, think about the story, how long it took to get Isaac. Now he's a lad that's old enough to figure out we've got wood, we have fire, we don't have the sacrifice. And Abraham's ready to kill him. Well, he did it by faith, is what the Hebrew writer says, because he's obedient. But then consider also the reality that he had that profound trust. Because Abraham, the text tells us, Abraham understood, if I kill Isaac, God can bring him back to life. God can still fulfill his promises. Do you have that kind of faith? Sometimes I waver and think, I don't have that kind of faith. But we need to have the attitude of increase our faith. And so we think about how wonderful it is that we have that biblical story and we can have that kind of faith. You and I are counting on a resurrection, aren't we? Look at Genesis 22, back when we go to the story, Genesis chapter 22, and look at verse 12. God said, as he's about to plunge the knife, slay his son in verse 10, the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham, verse 11. So he said, here I am. And he said, the angel says, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Now I know. That's our point. Faith is known. It was tested. And he came out having passed the test. And we need to have that kind of attitude like Abraham. And we need to have that kind of attitude because may I suggest to you that when you die, which it's appointed unto man once to die, and after this the judgment, what are you counting on? Resurrection from the dead? It being real? Reward of those that diligently seek him? Faith. Your faith, you're counting on a resurrection. You're counting on your own resurrection. And so we need biblical accounts that Abraham would have such a faith that he knew that if God wanted to bring Isaac back to life, he can and he will. And Jesus was declared to be the Son of God by the resurrection. Romans chapter 1, verse 3. And so it will be for us and our own resurrection at that great day. This great cloud of witnesses, that three-point sermon back in Hebrews chapter 11, they were assured of the promises of God. They were persuaded of them. They embraced them. Rick sent me what Rennie Frazier always sends to him. Give them heaven. Preach and give them heaven. That's what you embrace. That's what you long for. That's what you hope for. Eternal life. Let's talk about Abel for just a moment, our second one. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4, in this chapter, we know the account of how God, Abel and Cain came before God with their sacrifices. And in Cain's anger, he killed his brother Abel. Chapter 11, verse 4, by faith Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it, being dead, still speaks. This morning, we're talking about Abel. He's still talking to us. We're looking at his example. We're looking at his character. And so if you look at the text, what words in this verse, Hebrews 11, 4, describes Abel's faith? Righteous? How about a more excellent sacrifice? How about that? And so faith is active. It is obedient. A more excellent sacrifice. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 12 tells us that Cain's works were evil and Abel's works were righteous. What made Abel's works more righteous? It's a good question. Genesis chapter 4 and verse 4, look at the passage with me. Go back now to the story. And notice what it says in Genesis 4 and verse 4. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering. Abel's offering to God was his best. Now, you may have a strong thought there. Rick may have a strong thought that says, well, the difference between Abel's sacrifice and Cain's was, obviously, faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word of God. Therefore, God had required an animal sacrifice. Abel brought the animal sacrifice. Cain did not, and therefore, he was not pleasing. And yet, I think that the answer is found in one was a shepherd and one was a tiller of the ground, and they were to bring what they had and give God their best. And these words describe Abel's sacrifice, fat in the first. And then Cain's, it just says he brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. There are no descriptive terms. And yet all over this country, we have watermelon festivals where they're going to have a watermelon contest. Who's got the best watermelon? tomato festivals, strawberry festivals, every kind of festival, persimmon festivals, pumpkin festivals, whatever festival you want to talk about, all over the country, where people bring their best. And who's going to get the contest, the blue ribbon, for the best persimmons? Or whatever it might be. And there's a difference, isn't there, between bringing your junk and your best. And so I want to suggest to you that a known faith gives its best to God. God respected Abel. The Lord did not respect Cain and his offering. So let me just ask a few questions as we end. Why do you dress up for worship? Is there a dress code? You understand where I'm going. You've come into the presence of Almighty God to worship. To worship. Do we give our best? What kind of sleep do you get to come to worship? Do you come tired because you were playing video games or you stayed up late? Because after all, it's the quote-unquote weekend. You see how the world does that? This is not the first day of the week. In fact, many calendars now start on Monday. Just eliminate the Lord's Day, the first day of the week. You see how important it is you bring your best to the Lord. What about when it comes to, let me ask you a question. Is there a difference between the Sunday morning worship and the Sunday night worship? Or the Wednesday night? We say, well, that's a Bible study. We worship when we sing. The word is presented. We offer prayers. Those are all acts of worship. Are any of those different from one? Well, of course, we partake of the Lord's Supper. I just want you to think about your faith. Bringing your best to God every time you come to worship in the assembly, together, collectively. How about your giving? In the Minor Prophets, God said, you're robbing me. I said, how are you robbing me? He says, you're robbing me because you bring me your junk. Can we rob God by bringing Him just a little bit of how we've prospered? Or do we give as we've prospered and as we have purposed in our heart? You see where we're going with this. What is my faith? To give our best. Do I give liberally? And God who then gives liberally, do we give our best? And so is Abel's faith worth our imitation? I would say it is. And we know his faith because we have the story and we have what the Hebrew writer adds to that. In 1 John chapter 5, as we close, 1 John 5, verse 4 and 5. 1 John 5, verse 4 and 5. But whatever is born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is he who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? What a known faith it will be. So in our worship hour, we will be noting a righteous faith. And as I said, we'll point out, it's already been said about Abel. You could say he has a righteous faith. That's the word that's used. So you'll see how they intermingle there. And I won't have to point that out. Thank you very much for your attention this morning. That's the lesson that I have. And I look forward to speaking to you again at the worship hour.